This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Another meeting today between the woman at the center of the Jeffrey Epstein case and the number two official at the Department of Justice.
Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche has more questions for Jeffrey Epstein's former companion, Ghislaine Maxwell. Sources told ABC News Maxwell initiated the meeting as she appeals her conviction and tries to get out of a 20-year prison sentence. Her attorney told us she answered every question.
ABC Chief Investigative Correspondent Aaron Katursky at the federal courthouse in Tallahassee, Florida, where the discussions are happening. Israeli strikes continuing across Gaza, and experts warn that Palestinians are on the brink of famine. The aid group Doctors Without Borders says one in four children and pregnant or nursing women are currently malnourished. The Hamas-run Gaza Health Ministry says hospitals have recorded 9 new deaths due to starvation over the past 24 hours. Disgraced former Congressman George Santos expected to begin serving a 7-year prison sentence for fraud today. This is ABC News.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulotz. Tony Evers will not run for a third term as Wisconsin's governor. Evers dropping the news in a video posted to his social media accounts.
For 5 decades, my family has sacrificed to give me the gift of service. They're my world, and I owe to them to focus on doing all the things we enjoy and love doing together. It's why, Wisconsin, I'm announcing that I will not be running for a third term. I'm so humbled to be your governor. This is the best job I ever had.
The announcement caps a political career that began when Evers was elected state superintendent of public instruction in 2009. He was reelected twice before running for governor in 2018, defeating Republican incumbent Scott Walker with 49.5% of the vote. Evers won a second term in 2022 over Republican Tim Michaels. The 73-year-old waited until work on a state budget was completed before announcing his decision, which opens the door to a Democratic primary nearly a year from now. Northern Wisconsin Congressman Tom Tiffany continues to consider entering the Republican primary field for governor. Congressman Tiffany has previously said he will make a decision on a 2026 gubernatorial run after July. There are currently 2 Republican candidates who have officially announced their campaign for governor, Washington County Executive Josh Schumann and manufacturing CEO Bill Berrien. A major development is coming to a Madison suburb. What used to be a quarry in Fitchburg is set to become an apartment complex and a row of retail stores. The developers of Jamestown Quarry are bringing a 273-unit apartment and 4 businesses to the area by early next year. That includes a bank, 2 fast food restaurants, and a car wash. The developers could open up more housing on the rest of the property once the first phase of construction is complete. I'm Joanne Krulotz.
Baseball tonight in Milwaukee. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. A special night at the ballpark. The Brewers open a home series against the Marlins today, followed by a home run derby. Over 25 former players will be on hand, including Ryan Braun, Corey Hart, J.J. Hardy, and Prince Fielder, all to celebrate the 25th anniversary of the opening of Miller Park, now American Family Field. NBA, Damian Lillard says he has great memories of playing alongside Giannis, but admits he was shocked when the Bucks waived him after just 2 years with the team. NFL at the Packers training camp, running back Marshawn Lloyd finally back on the practice field after a long rookie season plagued with injuries, then surgery to remove his appendix in December.
It's fun, like the little kid in the candy store, man. It's exciting. You know, last year was a lot of watching, and now it's being out there, being able to be tired again, trying to catch my breath. It's a blessing. It's a blessing to be out there.
That's Packers running back Marshawn Lloyd with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
We bring the excitement to you from wherever the Milwaukee Brewers are playing on WRCE FM 107.7 AM 1450 in Richland Center.
Partly cloudy today. We'll get to around 85 for a high this afternoon. Tonight, there is a slight chance of scattered thunderstorms. We'll drop to the mid to upper 60s tomorrow. Partly cloudy, scattered thunderstorms with a high in the mid to upper 80s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 68.
Matt Nair on air.
Corrine Hendrickson, you mentioned a conversation with Ron Johnson, Corrine, about the need for child care in Wisconsin. How did that go?
I said, why don't you think we should fund? And he goes, I think an elegant solution, it would be for moms like you to stay home so the other moms can go to work. And I said, well, and I shouldn't get paid for that? And he just kind of stared at us. And I said, that tells me all I need to know.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Joe Thomas grew up in Brookfield, Wisconsin, and had Hall of Fame football careers with the Badgers and Cleveland Browns. So what's his passion now? Well, join us Tuesday when Joe Thomas sits down with Brady Ewing and me for a special on-location show from Six Springs Farm, the home to Hall of Fame beef. Catching up with Joe Thomas, Tuesday. You're not going to want to miss it.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome the founder of Wisconsinology.com, Frank Anderson. And it's a bar band Friday night, so Wisconsin music expert Terry Barr joins the show with new music and great conversation.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights 6 to 8. News from the Center, WRCE.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Hey, good morning. It is 8:06. It's nice to have you here. Today, I'm up north in Oshkosh, live from Oshkosh at our Civic Media station, WISS, and I thank them again for their hospitality, for the coffee, for the donuts, for the abundant sunshine, which Parker Olson produces our show here. And he does so from an interior room in Madison's Studio A2, compared to here in Oshkosh, where I don't know if you caught it earlier.
I did.
the sun, there's a certain point where the sun comes over a tree here across the street, Main Street here in Oshkosh, and doesn't quite get out of the view of the window. And for that time, I am a deity or angelic, yeah, or being fried to death by a magnifying glass like an ant on the sidewalk. And you finally was able to swing the curtain over.
You were impressively bright.
Yes. Nobody's going to accuse me of that any other time except when that happens.
Those teeth were shiny.
But it was. It is a lovely day here. It's a lovely studio, and we thank, again, our Civic Media friends for their hospitality as we get around. You know, we're back here in the Oshkosh and Green Bay areas on weekday mornings, and we are very pleased to be so. Hope we're doing a good job for you. We've been talking a lot about the Oshkosh area. We talked to the Winnebago County Executive. We talked to the Vice Chancellor and Provost at UW Oshkosh, and we're going to talk to a Fox Valley State Representative, Lee Snodgrass, in just a moment. First, a reminder that meteorologist Brittany Merlot is taking the day off to enjoy life at the EAA Air Venture. We saw her enjoying it, roughing it in that tent. I'll tell you, it was probably not her most comfortable night last night as I was coming up here early this morning from Beaver Dam. And again, why Beaver Dam? Because it was the closest place to find a hotel room to get here. But as I was driving up, super humid, super foggy, and I hope that they were able to enjoy the night as best they could before another day here at EAA Air Venture. But even without Brittany here, Rob writes in, good morning from Tigerton. Cloudy skies, 66 degrees. He said at the time that it was very foggy. He has since updated that to say the fog has lifted. Mowed a few lawns in the Tigerton area, got done with the final yard, and then a downpour hit. And let's see, he got down to the Zion Lutheran Church where his parents got married. He's got to mow areas in the rural Tigerton today after all the fog burns off. He did give an update to say the fog has lifted in Tigerton, but it's still cloudy and 67 degrees. Tigerton had just over a half inch of rain yesterday, Tigerton being 65 miles north of Oshkosh. We appreciate the directional on that, Rob. Thank you very much. So again, Brittany will be back on Monday, but you get updates on your weather forecast throughout the course of the day on the Civic Media Radio Network. And if you haven't heard it yet, it is Free Ticket Friday. So coming up in just a little bit, I will give you the keyword for this morning. Text that in through the Civic Media app. You'll be in the running for Brewers tickets for next Wednesday afternoon's game between the Brewers and the Cubs. So stick around for that. State Representative Lee Snodgrass of Appleton joins us now to talk a bit about issues that she's working on in the Fox Valley and in Madison. Lee, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Pat. Nice to be here.
It's so nice to see you again. And of course, we've got the news of the day to start off with. Governor Evers announcing yesterday that he will not be seeking a third term in 2026. Opens up a wide primary from both parties for governor. But let's stick with the governor's announcement first and your reaction to Governor Evers saying that he will not be seeking that third term.
I think the governor is doing what's right for him and his family right now, and I completely support that. I think Tony Evers is going to go down as a governor who prevented a lot of horrible things from happening, and I had a front row seat to that. Never was there a more powerful veto pen, and I'm excited about what's coming up in terms of new candidates, new opportunities to put another Democrat in the governor's office.
Well, especially when you consider not just the gubernatorial primary that's coming up in August of next year, but the lieutenant governor primary, that's an entirely separate beast. You don't run as a running mate until after the primary when you see who won the lieutenant governor primary. You could see wide open races if Josh Call or Sarah Godlewski decide to run for attorney general or secretary of state, if those become open seats. And of course, a whole lot of legislative seats are going to be out there as well. You've been county chair of the Outagamie County Democratic Party, so you have seen your share of primaries.
I have.
so I want your thoughts on primaries, because there are those who work so hard to have them not happen and see them as inherently bad, that they suck up resources and they can lead to party divisions. But I don't think that that's always the case. And I think given that we may see a lot of primaries next year, I think we need to, you know, have an open mind about, you know, some primaries might be divisive, but other primaries are healthy.
You know, I think we did a pretty good job last time. I remind people that Governor Evers was one of, I think, a dozen candidates that were running. And, you know, I remember, because I was county party chair, everybody had their favorite, and it stayed ultimately pretty positive. You know, towards the end there were a few barbs, which does tend to happen. But in the end, I think all of the candidates sort of flexed their muscles a little bit, were able to articulate their points better for people, and that's great for voters. So I actually think primaries make people stronger. I understand the arguments. I've been part of a primary myself. When I ran for state senate in 2018, I had a primary candidate. It can be a little annoying. It can be harder for fundraising, but ultimately you come out a stronger candidate and better able to articulate your message to voters.
Well, and you're going to want that, because the elections next year were going to be pivotal anyway. Democrats were already looking at the possibility of a trifecta, now with fairer maps of winning control of the Assembly and or the Senate and holding on to the governor's office. So a primary might only help those matters. So how do you talk about the stakes of 2026 when you're talking to voters about what they could see after 2026, depending on how the voting goes, how much differently or perhaps how much better things could be in Wisconsin?
Well, I mean, we're kind of following on the heels of what Minnesota did. We're really going for that trifecta. We have a real opportunity in the Senate and in the Assembly, a little harder for us in the Assembly, but we're not afraid of that hard work. And then, of course, holding on to the governor's office. So this is, you know, we say it every time, this is the most important election in Wisconsin. But unfortunately, we live in a state where every election has really, really high stakes consequences. And this is certainly one of them. We have to hold on to the governor's office if we're going to go for a legislative majority. The most tragic thing really would be having that legislative majority and not being able to get anything done. The Republicans have sort of fought against that a little bit with Governor Evers. And like I mentioned before, he was the only person really keeping some horrible legislation that was easily passed from becoming law in the state of Wisconsin.
We're talking to State Representative Lee Snodgrass of Appleton. And of course, all this news coming literally days after the state budget debate was settled and the state budget was signed. There was this agreement between Governor Evers and legislative Republicans. We have certainly covered it at length, both the good and the bad. And, you know, in each case, you've had people explaining, you know, what ultimately tipped the scales for them to say, OK, I can support this, or nope, I just can't support it. You came down as a no vote, and talk about what led you to that point.
For me, the no vote was really easy. I had some kind of deal breakers as a politician and representing my district. One of them is making sure that we have public education in a really strong place and not having an increase in general aid. When I talked to my superintendent and I said, hey, you know, is this special education reimbursement going to be enough? Is this going to help you? We're still going to have to go to referendum. And we really need to make sure that we have that general aid. The other one was childcare. I spent the entire last summer talking to childcare providers, both in-home and group center childcare providers. And while it was a little bit better than it was going to be, there was going to be nothing in the budget. So I am very appreciative of the governor and Senator Hasselbein for their negotiation. The fact of the matter is that's going to end in a year. We're going to be right back where we started from. And that also comes with some really bad policy strings attached. We're going to increase ratios, and we're going to have, you know, young people who may not be ready for the job able to be certified as childcare teachers.
So where do we go from here? The state budget's done. There's still a session to be held through the fall and into early spring of next year, theoretically, depending on when Republicans want to go home and start campaigning. But there are still plenty of bills out there, plenty of work to be done. What are some of your priorities post-budget?
I think this September, you're going to see a lot from our office and some other offices on the other side of the aisle in regards to election bills. Voter access, making sure people who are living with a disability have better access to voting, making sure that we sort of work with our clerks. I've had a pretty good working relationship with Representative Scott Krug. We're going to continue to try to find some common ground together on really strengthening Wisconsin's election process.
Okay, I'm glad to hear that there's the potential for bipartisanship in that. How do I put this? I mean, I'm glad you're doing it.
Just be honest. Do it.
I'm glad you're putting it out there, because a record has to be made of what we can do. But I mean, are you doing this thinking that you're going to be able to force a vote and get these to pass, or at least just put the contrast out there of what we could have in Wisconsin to make elections better?
Legislating in the minority in Wisconsin is a challenge, because almost everything that we introduce doesn't even get a hearing and get out of committee for a vote, much less to the floor. We do have to continue to find those pathways. People put us here to put our ideas out there and to have solutions. And, you know, soon enough, we're going to be in the majority, and we want to have that record of legislation that's ready to go. This is part of it. There are, though, in the space of democracy, I will say, some lanes where we can find agreement. And it's very rare. We still disagree and argue, but I think you'll see that there will actually be some bipartisan bills going into that committee and coming out onto the floor.
I think that was part of my hesitancy, was to avoid expressing the frustration. And yet, thankfully, you went ahead and did it, that there are a lot of Democratic bills that do not even get the courtesy of a public hearing. And folks going, oh, it's always like that. No, most definitely was not. This is a pretty recent development, within the past decade of Democrats not getting bills, even a public hearing, unless you can find some kind of a bipartisan co-authorship on there. So, I mean, you're already starting to put some cracks in the barrier that used to be there for the longest time. I'm sure you feel that has something to do with the working relationships you're starting to develop, having been there for a few years now.
Yeah, I mean, I was part of the COVID class. So when I came in, we were already isolated. And part of being effective in politics is building those relationships. So I feel like I was behind the eight ball, my class was. But, you know, you do start to, as horrible as the headlines are, we have to work together as colleagues. And we do start to see the human side of one another. And I know on certain issues, you know, where I can find some common ground. Representative Elijah Behnke was on my pollinator bills. That's the first time Republican has been an author on those bills with me. He's an organic farmer. These are things that matter to him. Scott Krug has always been somebody who cares about local government and their clerks. That's a common area there he and I can find. So I might disagree with them on 98% of other things, but I do look for those pathways where we can find some bipartisan work to do.
And honestly, if you can't be bipartisan about pollinators, seriously, I thought you found such an opening for some real conversations about things that are good for everybody and for our natural resources and beyond. Lee Snodgrass, State Representative from the Appleton area. It is always such a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Yeah, have fun in Oshkosh. Thanks for coming up.
Enjoying it very much. Have a great weekend.
Take care.
All right. A local break is next for some of you. And then coming up in our next half hour, we will be talking to Mike Clemens. We'll be doing some sports. Here's a guy happy to have one foot in the Brewers having a great season and Packers training camp as well. All that ahead here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is News from the Setter, WRCE. Contact D&T Well Service for well service and replacement. Mary and Derek McCormick, owners of D&T Well Service, are insured, and they do new installs and fix existing systems, submersible pumps, booster pumps, and jet pumps. Ask about the constant pressure system that gives you the best pressure and quality water out of your well. Contact D&T Well Service, 606-5596. No pressure, no water, no problem. Call D&T Well Service, 606-5596, serving Southwest Wisconsin. Check them out at dtpumpwell.com.
A game without a crowd is just a scrimmage. A performance without an audience is just a rehearsal. Without your presence, high school sports and the performing arts aren't possible. Ensure that these essential extracurricular activities continue to enrich the lives of students in Wisconsin. Purchase a ticket to your local high school's game or performance.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
We've got Chris from Nina. What's your thought this afternoon, Chris?
Oftentimes you have only one set of viewers that will watch Fox News or watch CNN. What I really actually love and respect from all your viewers is the fact that you tend to have viewers that think on both sides of the aisle. To be open-minded, you need to be willing to listen and learn and possibly change your mind. You don't have to change your mind, but just being willing to listen.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6.
For 75 years, the Muscular Dystrophy Association's voices have thundered through the halls of Congress.
For 75 years, we've willed the impossible into existence.
For 75 years, the MDA community has pushed the science,
shifted the narrative,
and established the field of neuromuscular medicine.
And until that day, when this is all a thing of the past,
you couldn't stop us if you tried.
Join us and celebrate 75 years of breakthroughs at MDA75.org.
Every 15 seconds, someone is diagnosed with cancer. If it's happened to you or someone you love, the American Cancer Society can help at every step of the journey. Visit cancer.org today.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WRCE. I'm Joanne Krulotz, and here's what's going on in Richland Center this morning.
The body of a missing La Crosse woman has been discovered. The La Crosse Police Department was informed by the Houston County Sheriff's Office in Minnesota that the body of 22-year-old Elliot Hines was found Wednesday morning in the Mississippi River near Brownsville, Minnesota. That's about 15 miles downriver from La Crosse, where a search had been underway since the Viterbo University graduate student went missing early Sunday morning. Police are still investigating and are waiting on results of an autopsy for an official cause of death. The Wisconsin State Biennial Budget was passed last month by a bipartisan vote. Joint Finance Committee co-chair Senator Howard Markline was a recent guest on WRCO's morning show with Phil Nee. Senator Markline said that this was the most unusual budget he has been involved with for different reasons.
One is what was going on in Washington, D.C., and kind of the race to get, we had to get our budget done and signed before President Trump signed that budget, and then that affects $1 billion a year in federal money coming into the state of Wisconsin. So we had, this has to do with the hospital assessments and stuff. And the governor's office knew that too. I mean, so The governor's office was also in a position where they wanted to get it done, but a lot of conversations going on. And for me, as co-chair of a joint finance committee, it was, I'd be negotiating with the assembly co-chair, and we get a tap on the shoulder saying, "Oh, that issue is being negotiated with the governor, and so don't talk about it." Anyway." So it was just, it was unusual, just a very different budget process this time around. But all in all, I think we ended up in a good place. Good budget for Wisconsin, good budget for Southwest Wisconsin, good budget for rural areas. So, and obviously with the compromise budget, there's things that I wish we would have gotten, and it was a give and take. So we ended up, I think, in a good place. And the vote in both houses was bipartisan, which doesn't happen too often on a budget bill. But, I was happy about that.
Mark Lyne was pleased with the tax cuts included in the bill.
It's $1.5 billion of tax cuts. And the tax cuts are all oriented to, I guess, what I would consider kind of the average Wisconsinite. Income taxes, that second bracket we're raising, married filing jointly, we're raising it. It was $19,000 to $38,000 was the second bracket. We're now raising that from $19,000 to $67,000. Basically, it cuts that taxes in that bracket by one percentage point, which is, which is meaningful. And so people should start seeing that once the Department of Revenue gets that updated. Also, we're going to be exempting retirement income for people that are age 67 or older. And so now we're going to be exempting $24,000 of retirement income per person for people that are over 67. And so that amounts to, in round numbers, about $1,000 per year in savings for people. So, again, that's not insignificant. And then the final part of the tax cut has to do with our electricity, sales tax on electricity. During the winter, there is no sales tax on electricity and natural gas, okay? But in the summertime, the state of Wisconsin taxes that. And of course, we all are going to be paying a lot of electric bills this week with the heat kicking in. But so we will now be exempting electricity and natural gas during the summer months as well. So, and for a lot of people, their summer utility bills are as high or higher than in the wintertime. So that's going to amount to effectively, it's going to be a 5.5% cut in your utility bill, which, again, that affects everybody.
The sales tax will automatically be removed from energy bills beginning October 1st. A package of bills in the U.S. Senate seeks to help lower costs for working families. Jimmy Cuska reports.
Senator Tammy Baldwin is part of a group of legislators that have introduced the Child Care for Working Families Act, which is part of a package of bills Baldwin says will lower costs for Wisconsin families.
I've introduced a package of bills that will address the challenges that I hear about in every community every day, from the high cost of housing, child care, and household goods.
The child care bill would cover a wide range of issues currently facing child care providers in Wisconsin and across the country.
Our bill ensures that no working family will pay more than 7% of their income on child care. This legislation will also provide grants to help communities in need to open new child care centers, covering startup and licensing costs. We'll also make sure that child care workers are paid a living wage and achieve parity with elementary school teachers who have similar credentials and experience. Lastly, our bill would dramatically increase access to quality pre-K.
Baldwin said that an investment in child care will also have other benefits.
When parents cannot find affordable care, they cannot join the workforce or go back to school to get the skills they need to land a good-paying job.
Two other bills, the Price Gouging Prevention Act and First-Time Homebuyer Tax Credit Act, are part of the package. Meanwhile, Governor Tony Evers has launched the Child Care Bridge Payment Program, which provides $110 million in monthly direct payments to Wisconsin child care providers through June 2026.
A legendary Western Wisconsin home will receive state funding for upkeep. The recently passed Wisconsin state budget allocates $5 million to the nonprofit, preserving famed architect Frank Lloyd Wright's Taliesin home and studio near Spring Green. Sauk County Sheriff Chip Meister has responded to questions about its policy of ICE housing. The Sauk County Sheriff's Office has been asked about the housing of immigration and customs enforcement detainees in the Sauk County Jail. According to a press release, the Sauk County Sheriff's Office has a longstanding tradition of assisting local, state, and federal partners with the housing of inmates. Sauk County Sheriff Chip Meister says, "Immigration is a federal issue. As sheriff, I do not make any decisions on the apprehension of the detainees, absent some or other crime having been committed, or deportation of these detainees. I merely provide food and shelter until a determination is made by federal authorities about how they wish to proceed with their legal process." You've been listening to WRCE's local news on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Take your favorite WRCE shows with you on the go by downloading the Civic Media app in the Apple or Google Play stores. For WRCE and Civic Media, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
We bring the excitement to you from wherever the Milwaukee Brewers are playing on WRCE FM 107.7 AM 1450 in Richland Center.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulatz. A bicyclist from La Crosse was killed in Vernon County. Sheriff Roy Torgerson reports a crash occurred Wednesday afternoon at approximately 1:30 on State Highway 35 in the town of Bergen, rural Stoddard. A 72-year-old man from La Crosse was riding a bicycle southbound on the southbound paved shoulder of State Highway 35 south of the city of La Crosse. The cyclist suddenly veered left into the path of a southbound vehicle operated by a 74-year-old female of rural Genoa. The operator of the vehicle made an evasive maneuver, but was unable to avoid a direct impact collision with the cyclist. After extensive life-saving measures were exhausted, the cyclist was pronounced dead at the scene by a deputy of the Office of Vernon County Coroner, Betty Nye. Through further investigation to determine why the cyclist made the sudden maneuver into the roadway, it was learned he frequently cycled on Mohawk Valley Road, which intersects the opposite side of the highway. The operator of the motor vehicle nor her passenger reported any injuries. All names are being withheld pending family notifications. A portion of State Highway 35 was closed in both directions for approximately 2 hours. Democratic candidate for Wisconsin 3rd Congressional District, Laura Benjamin, hosted a town hall in Chippewa Falls Monday night. Benjamin met with a number of local residents at Irvine Park, sharing detailed information about some of the lesser-known provisions in the new federal budget bill. Questions from area residents attending the town hall centered on issues like health care access and Social Security funding. Some also lamented the influence of big money in politics just months after watching the most expensive state Supreme Court race in American history. For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Many blame the cancellation of The Late Show with Steve Colbert on the Paramount Skydance merger deal and say it was political, including Colbert, who had some choice F-words for the president. If it was political, Paramount should have thought harder about which presidential adversary to fire. The studio just gave Trey Parker and Matt Stone $1.5 billion in a new contract. During the much-anticipated season 27 debut episode, Parker and Stone wrote a blistering takedown of the president. The story involved a romantic or sex scene between Trump and Satan and also showed the president taking off all his clothes in the desert. Maybe Colbert got fired because he wasn't dirty enough? Here's a story that might not feel so good about a guy who made us feel so good. Trumpet expert Chuck Mangione has passed away at the age of 84. Mangione was known for his tune Feel So Good, which was a big hit in the 70s. It was a great tune. Rest in peace, Chuck. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
We bring the excitement to you from wherever the Milwaukee Brewers are playing on WRCE FM 107.7 AM 1450 in Richland Center.
Partly cloudy today. We'll get to around 85 for a high this afternoon. Tonight, there is a slight chance of scattered thunderstorms. We'll drop to the mid to upper 60s tomorrow. Partly cloudy, scattered thunderstorms with a high in the mid to upper 80s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Right now, it's 70.
Matt Nair on air.
Corrine Hendrickson, you mentioned a conversation with Ron Johnson, Corrine, about the need for child care in Wisconsin. How did that go?
I said, why don't you think we should fund? And he goes, I think an elegant solution, it would be for moms like you to stay home so the other moms can go to work. And I said, well, and I shouldn't get paid for that? And he just kind of stared at us. And I said, that tells me all I need to know.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. We're on the road at WGBW in beautiful Green Bay, Wisconsin, talking about all things Green Bay. And also, the Packers are back at training camp. We'll discuss it. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
Does your radio show come with a costume change? This one does, because it's a
I was free... wondering. I wasn't sure if you did change.
It is Free Ticket Friday. We're giving away tickets to a Brewers game. The Brewers are playing this afternoon. One of the people on this show is going to the game right after this, making making his way to Milwaukee. And so the Brewers Hawaiian shirt that was given to me for my birthday a couple of weeks back by one of my daughters has been donned and is ready to head down and see the game today. Although we're kind of matchy. We got the light blue shirts. Yours have what are those, limes or kiwis or something on there?
It's up for debate. I believe lime or kiwi is the running theory.
Okay.
We're not sure.
Okay.
I'm on team kiwi.
Team kiwi. Okay. Well, yeah. I'm team Brewers over here and ready to head down to American Family Field for what's going to be a wonderful day, a wonderful game, and we're going to get to that. But we've also had Packer training camp open up, and so Mike Clemens is here with all that and more to help kick us off into the weekend. Mike, hello, how are you?
Hi, Pat. Yeah, I'm calling you from training camp. I'll be here through Labor Day weekend. I will shoot down and catch a couple Brewer games. I can't do this one. As you say, that Brewers game today, the first pitch is at 3:10, and then they're having this big anniversary today. So that's a great game to go to today. You know, you got the Brewers opening a series against the Marlins, and then after that, they have brought back over 25 players to represent each year that they're celebrating the 25th anniversary of opening Miller Park. Can you believe the ballpark's that old already?
No.
Now, of course, it's American Family Field with its wonderful retractable dome, because in the spring when it's raining and it's like, well, gee, do I go to the ballpark to cover the game? Yeah, the game is on every day. You know, it's on every day. It's a beautiful thing. There aren't those costly rain delays. And so it'll be Freddie Peralta on the mound for the Brewers. The Brewers were in first place in not only their division, best record in baseball, right? 61 wins.
Yeah.
And after the game, then they're going to have this home run derby, and they brought back guys like, you know, Ryan Braun and Prince Fielder and Carlos Gomez, Corey Hart, all these fan favorites, Jeff Jenkins. And Carlos Gomez and Brawny will be team captains, and they will pick, you know, hitters for their team and have a little home run derby after the game today. So that's going to be a great one to watch.
It really is. And I have to say, it'll be kind of cleansing for me in this way. One of the best displays of hitting I'd ever seen was back when Mark McGwire was at his peak, and he was coming to the Metrodome to play the Twins. And I made sure to get there extra early for BP. And watching Mark McGwire launch these things in BP at the time, not knowing what we know now, was just wonderful to watch as a baseball fan. And then, of course, later in hindsight, it feels so tainted that I tell you, today's home run derby is going to be kind of a cleansing for me after what I had to see there, you know, more than two decades ago.
The Cardinals came to town during that home run derby, if you will, between him and Sammy Sosa. And one of the guys at the station said, hey, you want to go? And I had actually had other plans that I was going to cover something else. I can't remember what. And he said he had a credential. Like, okay, yeah, let's go. And we go down and we see Mark McGwire hit, like, I think it was like 61 or 62. Mm-hmm. It was just, and I have not, you know, I mean, I got to see Hank Aaron as a kid. I have not seen anybody launch a ball that had this vertical trajectory immediately off the bat like that.
No.
The way he was that year. I mean, it just leapt off the bat and went way high. By the time it, you know, Uecker could have called a get up, get out of here, gone within a second of that thing. And then keeps on creeping and creeping and creeping, and then goes deep back into the bleacher seats at County Stadium. That was, it was, you know, it was amazing to watch, no question.
Yeah. Tony writes on YouTube, where is Richie Sexson, one of the tallest baseball players I've ever seen? 45 homers in 01 and 03. So clearly, I think, I don't know if he's part of this later today, but when people see those 25 or more Brewers marking 25 years at this particular ballpark, there's going to be a lot of time travel today as people, like we just did, go back and have favorite memories of favorite players.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Wasn't he like 6'7"?
He was
pretty big. Of course, you got Aaron Judge now these days.
Yes, I know.
And he causes an eclipse when he gets into the batter's box.
And he can launch him. He too is fun to watch, as long as you're not playing against him at the time. So let's get to training camp. You're there. You've got the practices that are open to the public some days. It just has, you know, an aura. Everybody likes to talk about, you know, the kids and the bikes and everything. But I mean, it just is an experience for the players, for the spectators, for the community.
Right, and, you know, these players are juiced for it, too, because, you know, they are football players. This is what they do in life. They've worked very hard to get to this point. They heal from the wounds from the off season. Then they go back after about a month or two off, and they've been working out to get to this moment. And, by the way, they have to re-earn their job. You know, there's a competition going on. So for the first 3 or 4 days, under the, you know, current CBA, the collective bargaining agreement, the coaches don't throw the pads on right away in these guys. They've got to have like 3-4 practices in helmets and shorts. And so we started on Wednesday at 10:30. The practices are open every day at 10:30 to the public. They're going to go by fast. 20 years ago, when Mike Sherman was the head coach, and we still had two-a-days before those, you know, union agreements with the players, he had over 50 practices. You know, and I'm like trying to remember with my buddies, like, how did we cover 50? Because right now there's only 11 of these things before they get through the three preseason games. It's a 17-game season, though, you know, and that's kind of the changes. There are some more practices that I get to see, but that won't necessarily be open to the fans. But so I asked LaFleur about this. I said, so what do you accomplish with these practices without the pads before you put them on next week? And he said, particularly with the first-year players, he goes, I don't want you touching my quarterback, and I don't want you putting my running back on the ground, okay? Those are the two rules. And he said, you see, the difference is, you know, we could only go up to 75% speed even through the mini camp in June. So now we're going 100%, right? Mm-hmm. So when they're doing 11-on-11, you know, it's 100% in terms of speed, but, you know, guys can get twisted and tangled up and end up on the ground. He doesn't want that, because even when we put the pads on, you don't want to do that, because, you know, you don't want guys getting hurt in training camp. So those are some of the techniques that they're trying to learn this week. Now, one of the biggest stories we're watching is center Elgton Jenkins, who got moved from left guard to center in the offseason. They signed Aaron Banks from the 49ers for $77 million for a guard.
Yikes.
And Elgton, who, you know, was a veteran player, he got a deal just a couple of years ago at 68. And his agent called, you know, Russ Ball at the team and said, yeah, I'd like to inform you that our guy's going to get a raise if that's what the market is now. And so they're still in the middle of negotiating that contract, but, you know, we're waiting for that to be resolved. Meanwhile, Elgton has a sore back, and we've been seeing him on the sidelines working out with a trainer.
How's the mood of the team overall? I mean, you're coming off a loss to the Eagles in the playoffs. At what point has it already become ancient history, or do you actually keep that memory fresh to provide some motivation as you get set to start a new season?
Pat, I came into this season looking at this like, I am not going to accept, you know, rah-rah stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not going to accept, ooh, the window of opportunity. You know, there's to these guys, you know, to Brian Gutekunst and Matt LaFleur, you have to try and win a Super Bowl every year. There's no window of opportunity. It's like you have to win now and keep winning in order to keep your job. So with that in mind, I'm thinking, okay, if you're LaFleur and you're driving up to the stadium now and you're going to start your seventh season, what's left? I mean, you know, you've gone to the playoffs year after year. You've transitioned to a new quarterback after a Hall of Famer with now Jordan Love. What's and to me, it's just like we got to be better at, you know, winning in games. If you fall behind, solving the Rubik's Cube in game, or maybe there's something in the game planning, you know, like the game planning of a Bill Belichick or the in-game adjustments of a Tom Brady. How can we get to that next level to turn some of these games around? And I talked to Love about this. I said, hey, you know, this, you went 1-5 in the division last year. But one thing, is this an advantage that, you know, the Vikings are going to go with a new quarterback? The Lions are going to have to go with two new coordinators. And the Bears have a whole new coaching staff. He says, yeah. I says, I can just take last year's playbook and take it to the next step. So that saves me a lot of time. I'm going to ask LaFleur about that. But there's no question. The thing that really comes through is there's just another level of seriousness. It's not just guys hanging out and playing for each other. They are being more, in the third or fourth year, more serious about their business. And you see them running to coaches and getting things, you know, cleared up if maybe something didn't go just quite right on the last play. And you've got Josh Jacobs, the running back, and Xavier McKinney, the safety, the two free agents that came in and took over that locker room last year as leaders, that when they lost that game in Philadelphia, they looked around and told them all, this ain't it. This is not what we're here for. You know, you guys fell short, and this isn't going to happen again. And so there clearly feels like, I don't want to be cliche, a sense of urgency with all these players, and especially from LaFleur as well.
I like hearing that personally because, and I'm mixing apples and oranges, but with the Milwaukee Bucks, I think a lot of people got the impression there wasn't that urgency. It's like, yeah, we're good, but we didn't get there, but we'll come back next year. And for the Packers, it's like, we're not letting this momentum get away from us. How is wide receiver Matthew Golden looking so far? And while you're commenting on him as well, up on YouTube, Tony asks about Rashawn Gary as well. Is he looking healthier? So what can you tell us about a couple of the personnel?
I'll comment on Rashawn when I see the guys in pads. That's where you can do that.
Yeah.
But in terms of the first-round pick in Matthew Golden, number 22, on the second day of practice, yesterday at practice, and 11-on-11, there's Jordan Love in the pocket, and he starts throwing to 22 over the middle. A little slant pass, 7 yards at an angle over the middle. And he hits Matthew Golden over the middle. Now he turns and looks up. He's got three guys around him, a corner, a nickel, and a safety. He does one juke move, and he's gone. I mean, it just explodes past these dudes. And he did that a couple of times. And I went to Evan Williams, the second-year safety, and I said, what do you think about that? He goes, dude's going to be a problem. All Jordan's got to do is complete a high percentage short pass to him, and he's going to be a problem when he gets in the backfield with the ball in his hands.
Oh, but that is just what Jordan Love needed, was where he could throw high percentage short passes. Seriously, that plays right to his strength. Quickly then back to the Bucks for a second. Damian Lillard signed with his former team, Portland. What did he say about his time with Milwaukee?
You know, the injuries, you know, like Giannis getting hurt in the playoffs and his blood clot injury and then, you know, torn Achilles. Shocked that he got waived, but relieved when he told his children, because, you know, his wife divorced him when he got traded to Milwaukee. Oh. He told his kids, you know, I'm back now in Portland. And they said, you know, they cried with joy that they didn't have to fly to Milwaukee to visit their daddy.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, good. I'm glad to see an ending there. But, you know, we appreciated his time here with the Bucks while it lasted. Mike Clemens with sports, so much to cover now, getting back into the real thick of coverage season here. Thanks for checking in with us.
Thank you, Pat. Have a good weekend.
All right. You as well. We will come back. We'll talk to Lisa Hale here, one of our wonderful hosts here at WISS in Oshkosh. I mean, seriously, donuts, coffee, the whole schmear. Okay, not a schmear, but I don't even know if there's a good bagel shop here. We'll talk to her about Oshkosh and wrap up our day here. For others, there'll be a local update, and I'll be talking to you then on Monday morning. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. We reported last fall that Maine voters approved ballot question 1, limiting contributions to super PACs spending money in state elections. It passed with massive voter support, but like the state's foreign influence ban, was ruled as likely unconstitutional. That's what organizers hoped would happen. The ballot question reads, do you want to set a $5,000 limit for giving to political action committees that spend money independently to support or defeat candidates for office? The act also required super PAC donors to be disclosed. A First Circuit Federal District Court ruled July 15th that both provisions violated free speech protections and pointed to the Citizens United, Buckley v. Vallejo, and other past U.S. Supreme Court decisions. Harvard Law professor Lawrence Lessig argues that large contributions to PACs risk quid pro quo corruption of supported candidates, even if a candidate isn't directly speaking with the super PAC. Elon Musk's America PAC and crypto industry super PAC's support of Donald Trump are recent examples. Lessig said in 2023, when the initiative was announced, that it was designed to force the U.S. Supreme Court to answer whether contributions to super PACs can be regulated by states in the same way state candidate contributions are limited. The case will next be appealed in the First Circuit, then could reach the U.S. Supreme Court in late 2026. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
That sound? It's your recycling at work. And you can thank a Wisconsin woman for making it happen. Millie Zantow saw a waste sorting system in Japan during a trip in the 1970s. She came home to Prairie du Sac in Sauk County inspired. Her research led to the triangle-numbered plastic recycling system we still use today. So can you guess what percent of all the plastics produced in the United States ends up being recycled? 75%, 25%, or 5%? The answer coming up. Zantow also helped with Wisconsin's recycling laws, along with the opening of one of the first collection centers. But now, are you surprised to learn the answer is just 5% of plastics are recycled? It's according to the group Beyond Plastic. Yet Zantow always believed you don't have to be perfect, you just have to start. There's a smart slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
We've got Chris from Nina. What's your thought this afternoon, Chris?
Oftentimes you have only one set of viewers that will watch Fox News or watch CNN. What I really actually love and respect from all your viewers is the fact that you tend to have viewers that think on both sides of the aisle. To be open-minded, you need to be willing to listen and learn and possibly change your mind. You don't have to change your mind, but just being willing to listen.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6. Connecting audiences, powering brands. This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise.
It is time for a Friday morning look at sports from here in Richland Center. The Casanova Reds will be in action this evening. They'll host Mesa Maney. They finished up their Sunday league season this past weekend. I talked to Nick Stittleberg of the Reds about that.
Not exactly all the results we wanted, but the young group of guys, they all built off the start of the season and finished a lot stronger than they started off anyway. Unfortunately, we were one win short of making the playoffs, but that is a learning experience for the young guys, and hopefully next year we can build off of that and make a push into the playoffs then.
You're still in contention during the night games, and tell us that scenario.
Yep, as of right now, I believe we're sitting in fourth place right now. For the night league standings, and the top four teams out of each section of the night league will make the playoffs. So kind of control our own destiny as well. If we win out, we should easily make the playoffs. Otherwise, there's still chances if we win one or even no games, I think, with some help, we could still make the playoffs. But we'd rather not let other teams decide our fate. We'd rather try to win out and make a push into the playoffs for the Thursday night league.
Mesomania at Cazenovia gets underway at 7:30 tonight. We'll have a game on FM 100.9 and WRCO.com as Nick Stittleberg and the Reds look forward to the last couple of games of the regular night league season.
Yep, absolutely. That's why we try to do the Thursday night league, why we play our night games on Friday night. A lot of the guys work early in the morning, and a lot of the community do as well for factories and stuff around the area. So got to be to work at 5 if you're playing 7:30 and not getting home till going on midnight. Friday morning, it's not real conducive for work Friday for them, and then going into the weekend too, feeling up to snuff.
Teams that played last night around the area arena in the playoff contention with a 9-3 victory against Wisconsin Dells. Reedsburg 13-10 over Dodgeville. Pine Bluff Mount Hora beat Scholesburg Benton 5-3. Hollandale over Ridgeway 6-1. And Belleville 9-0 over Argyle. Hometown in action coming up this weekend. The playoffs get underway in Sunday League action. And teams that will be involved include Black Earth at Middleton, Reedsburg at Mazamani, Wanakee at Ashton, Sauk Prairie at Cross Plains in the northern section. In the west, Wyota at Verona, Pine Bluff Mount Horeb at Blanchardville, Belleville at Scholesburg Benton, Hollandale plays at Arena. For Arena manager Nick Larson, it's a special game coming up on Sunday as Arena has had a good enough season to have a home game to open the playoffs.
It's really a great feeling. Being a local here and going down to the park as I was a young kid and chasing foul balls and getting to kind of feel the whole experience of back in the day, we'll call it, and talking to some locals that played home talent, and we're pretty sure this is technically the first home playoff game in Arena hometown history. Going back to, I talked to guys that played in their early 60s. So it's pretty special. It's going to be a really good time and a lot of people looking forward to it.
Arena Aces hosting Hollandale on Sunday in the first round of the Western Section playoffs. We'll have coverage of that game as well. Last night, teams made up games in Church League softball that were rained out back on June 3rd. The Mission clinched the regular season title, topping Grace Community 22-2. Maddie McGlynn and Quinn Tidrick both went 4-for-4 to lead the way. Boscobel Assembly of God used a balanced, well-hitting lineup to outscore Richland Baptist Temple 2-8-4. Free Methodist Down Knights of Columbus 11-6. Nathan Phillips, Joshua Hassel, and Mike Monty combined for 10 hits, 4 doubles, and 9 RBIs for Free Methodist. Dan Makovic scored 3 times for the Knights. And the game between the Church of the Nazarene and St. Mary's will be played on Monday night. Richland Baptist Temple had a bye. That was the Baptist Temple 1 team. Church League teams will wrap up the regular season coming up on Tuesday. And the 2025 Church League postseason begins on Tuesday, August 5th. The Brewers expect to have right fielder Sal Frelick available when they return home tonight to face the Miami Marlins. Freddie Peralta will take the mound for the first home game in almost 2 weeks. Milwaukee is in first place in the National League Central, 1 game ahead of the Cubs. Fox Sports points out that the recent hot streak has helped the Brewers build a 61-41 record, which is the best in Major League Baseball. It was a light dusting of games in the majors yesterday. St. Louis 9-7 over San Diego. In the American League, Baltimore 4, Cleveland 3, Toronto 11-4 over Detroit. The Athletics beat Houston 5-2, and Seattle 4-2 winners against the LA Angels. A healthy Giannis Antetokounmpo will play for Greece again when the Euro basketball tournament tips off in late August. He will be joined on the team by his brother, Kostas. Behind the Buck Pass reports that Giannis has powered Greece to the most success it has had in years. He scored 26 a game to go with 6 rebounds and a 3.5 assist ratio at the Paris Olympics, helping Greece win a tough group competition before falling to Germany. The Packers throwback uniforms will be a tribute to the first time that stock was sold in the team. A Green Bay team first took the field in 1919, but stock was sold 4 years later in 1923 to keep the team operating. Sports Illustrated reports that this time the alternate jerseys will be navy blue with dark gold numbers and dark blue stripes. That's what the Packers were wearing 102 years ago. The throwback helmets will be painted to look like the leather helmets that players wore a century century ago. It is not known when those uniforms will be used in a game, but it will be at Lambeau Field. Yesterday at training camp, talking about backup quarterback Malik Willis. It was his coach talking about that.
Yeah, I think just from a fundamental standpoint, I think it's been critical. Just his footwork, his timing in the passing game. So we'll watch how he progresses, and I'm excited for him because I do think he's really grown. I think he's got good ownership of our offense and what we're trying to do. And, like, that is – I can't emphasize how difficult of a situation he was put in a year ago in terms of being here less than 3 weeks and having to go start a football game. So to have a year under his belt, I think will be extremely beneficial for him.
Packers head coach Matt LaFleur. And I'm Phil Nee with a WRCO Sports Update on a Friday morning. Thanks for joining us for Pat Kreitlow Mornings on WRCE, FM 107.7 and AM 1450. Don't forget those Brewers are during the day this afternoon. So they'll be getting underway a little bit later on in your home for the Brewers right here. There's a home run derby tonight for the old timers. That's why the game is during the day. Have a great one. Enjoy your weekend.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. We are getting word of a shooting on the campus of the University of New Mexico at Albuquerque. One person was killed. The campus has been shut down as the search for the gunman goes on. Another meeting today between the woman at the center of the Jeffrey Epstein case and the number two official at the Department of Justice. Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche interviewing Ghislaine Maxwell as to what they talked about. Her lawyer, David Marcus, tells ABC's Aaron Katursky.
We don't want to get into the substance of the questions. There were a lot of questions, and we went all day. And she answered every one of them. She never just said, I'm not going to answer, never declined.
President Trump on his way to Scotland for a business and personal trip as he opens up a new golf course resort there. At least 140 million Americans are under heat advisories and warnings today. Extreme weather stretching from Texas up through Maine. The FCC giving the green light for that $8 billion merger between Paramount, parent company of CBS, and Skydance Media. This is ABC News.